Agents of Smooch. I am director Annette Weirstra, and today I am on a mission to win all of your hearts over to one of my favorite mystery romance series, the Veronica Speedwell series by Deanna Raeburn. The series is one that has a happy continuation of personal and romantic relationships, an interesting title character, and each book has a standalone mystery that I frequently forget what happened when I reread the book. And today I am joined by two very special agents, the first being Agent Sandra Wong, who I think introduced me to Deanna Raeburn with the Lady Grey series.
Did I really? Oh, I'm happy to take credit. Agent Sandra, reporting for duty.
Yeah, you did your job. And Agent Kirsten Gorick, who I in turn won over to the Veronica Speedwell series by buying her the first book for her birthday last year. Hello, Kirsten.
Happy to be here, Agent and Director.
Yeah. Nice. And yeah, I'm very excited because I have, you know, people to talk about this series with, and I just want more people to talk about it with me.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, so I have two teenage sons, mm-hmm. And my whole family, my husband and my two sons, we all read the Veronica Speedwell series.
Oh, but they're good.
I love that.
They're so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so my 17-year-old just told me over dinner, I finished book six. And I said, did you not just start that today? He said, yeah, I just went right through it. So, yeah, we're big fans.
That's awesome. The series, it's a Victorian mystery series about a natural historian with a special in lepidoptery. I hope I said that right.
You said that which great.
Points for trying, either way.
Collecting butterflies. And she's a butterfly hunter, world traveler, who is always up for adventure. She, Veronica Speedwell, is joined by an eclectic and growing group of side characters, which I do love all the side characters, but most importantly, Stoker. And he is a taxidermist and partner in solving crimes.
I wanted to say, like, you have to insert sigh. You say
just like
Stoker.
And the heart eye emoji.
Yeah basically
fire
that's
emoji.
What we're doing right now. The first book in the series is A Curious Beginning, and the latest in the series, the sixth book, was just released I think this month, and us, not me, have already read it, so I think we're gonna sort of talk about the series generally in the first book. We're gonna try not to give away any of the mysteries because I forget what happens at the end of some of them. But also just sort of, we'll be sort of spoilery, but not too spoilery, so that you can all go in out and read the book if you haven't already. So let's start by expressing our undying love for Veronica. Shall we start with you, Sandra?
Oh my gosh. I don't know how to, I just love this series so much. My favorite things about it are, of course, being an author myself, the research, mm-hmm. so meticulously researched. But Deanna Raeburn, the author, is so great at incorporating all of these things that, you know, she spent a lot of time discovering and learning about in such smooth ways. And the mm-hmm. world that she creates is so wonderful. And I especially love learning, always in the author notes, learning about these amazing Victorian women in real life who did certain things that I had never heard of, because I did have a very, before reading the series and doing some more readings on my own, I did have this idea of Victorians as being very staid, and you know how that is. And yep. So it was so wonderful to hear about, you know, Victorian feminists and to learn more about that. So that's just one of the many things I love. And then how Veronica embodies that so charmingly, but, you know, with a little side of tartness. And I really love that about her. Yeah.
I mean, I love the Victorian era. So when you got me the book and I read the back, I was like, oh, this is going to be excellent. I'm very excited.
I was so nervous. I was like, what if she doesn't like it?
Well, I know you love your romance with a little bit of murder, mm-hmm. and I'm not opposed to that. I'm sort of, with the exception of things that scare me, so horror is out, I'm always open to any sort of genre, and I can fall in love with different things. And what I Sandra, you touched on the historical pieces, the research. I love reading the author notes too, because I feel like as I'm reading it, I'm always learning something, which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. And I think what I like about Veronica is she exists so vibrantly in this world that we think we know, but she subverts so many of the expectations of what society expects of her. And I think what sort of people have in their minds when they think about that time period. And I love that, but it doesn't feel outlandish. It still feels like this is a person who could have existed and lived the life that she lived and, you know, had the adventures that she had. And I think that's really kind of exciting. And what I also really love about it is her sharp wit, right? Like she can give anyone a verbal lashing. It doesn't matter who they are. Mm-hmm. And she just, you know, if she was a writer and she was wielding her pen like a sword, you know, when she uses her verbal lashings that way, it's just really sort of fascinating and kind of satisfying.
Yeah. Veronica is so appealing, like deeply, deeply appealing as a character.
Yeah. And I think she's enough of an outsider to sort of have a critical eye on the society, but also she's still an insider. So she has access to a lot of space. And now I'm deciding, do we reveal one of the big secrets of the first book or not?
I don't.
Do we sound the spoiler horn already?
Yeah.
Maybe we should. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we will soon. We will like not immediately. I don't think knowing it like ruins the story for you, but yeah, for me, I've frequently said murder and romance is my happiest place, and but I do also love that historical piece where you have women in society who are sort of already defying expectations, and there were women who were like lady scientists and maybe not as accepted in society, but finding ways to make a mark or do research or experience and explore the world in that way. And so that is really fun. I'm horrified of butterflies, so I would never be a butterfly.
Really?
Oh, I'm terrified of them.
Can I ask why?
Phobia is. I don't know. I'm really scared of caterpillars. And since all of our agents are in Edmonton, you might remember, like back, Kirsten's probably too young, there was a year where we had a major caterpillar infestation, and I feel like I was emotionally scarred, and now in turn, I am terrified of butterflies, like horrified.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Right.
So I go into butterfly spaces because I think it's a stupid fear, but I have a really hard time with it, and it's kind of funny.
Well, it's probably for other people. Face your fear.
I try.
I don't think it's silly. I think it's, you know, I don't think any fears are technically rational. So whatever fear you have is always valid for whatever reason it is.
Yeah.
You know, and they are beautiful. Butterflies can be beautiful.
But they flit at you.
They're very, they're also alien. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at a butterfly, I don't know what you call it, a vivarium, I guess?
Yes, I believe so.
In St. Louis. It was this massive place. And I remember one butterfly, you know, with its wings fully extended, I guess. It's probably the size of like a bread plate, a side plate.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
That's how large it was.
So
and it landed on my bare shoulder and its little feet. That was an experience. So I'm sorry to be freaking you out, Director Annette. I'm so sorry. But I can't say that I don't understand how some people might have a phobia.
Totally.
Yeah, after that, I was a little freaked out.
I remember in San Francisco, their Science Museum has this really cool like globe rainforest thing, and there's butterflies in it. And you have to like stay in like sort of a neutral zone so they can check you for butterflies or other birds or things. So and so when I was in that, this little girl says to me, "Oh, you have a butterfly on the back of your jacket." And my instinct is to take my jacket off and fling it on the ground and start beating it. And the mother could see that I was like trying to contain something. And she said, she sent this little 7 or 8 year old girl to go get the butterfly and off me and release it and save me from the butterfly. So,
wow.
You know,
saved
it's funny.
Children.
even though it is, yeah, I'm horrified.
Oh, well, there's a scene in one of the books, I don't remember which one, but there is a scene that I remember grossed me out, where Veronica was like either discussing some kind of eating habits of a certain type of butterfly, but it was quite gross and quite grotesque, and I remember being like, oh, I don't think I needed to know that about them ever, and I wish I could forget it.
I think I'm fascinated by stuff like that.
But they also talk about the glass wing in book four, where she goes to an island. Book four, everyone. Book four.
Read book four.
Yeah. But they have the glass wings where they have it's almost like the wings are like a stained glass. So I do, when they mention them, I often will like Google these butterflies to sort of see. Mm-hmm. But that one especially. Mm-hmm. It's stunning, like it's beautiful, and it'd be really cool to see that in person.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm interested too. I haven't read any interviews, you know, where Deanna Raeburn has said how she chose Lepidoptera and why, or if it's a personal interest or how that came about. So I'm interested in maybe trying to use Sir Google for that. To see if I can find that out. Yeah, suss it out.
It does seem like a ladylike profession.
Yes, it seems just acceptable enough, right? Like it's not too far out there, but it still allows her that freedom and travel and adventure without being, you know, over the top hunting, you know, I don't know, gorillas or cheetahs or something.
Or taxidermy, which... is
or
what
taxidermy.
Stoker, which is short for, I believe, Revelstoke Templeton.
Revelstoke Templeton Vane.
Templeton Vane, that's right. And he is a taxidermist and makes and restores all kinds of creatures. And so they have that common interest in science that sort of meshes.
Yes. But I love... And, you know, and I know that this is, of course, by design, but the arguments they get into as your two scientists, I just adored that word, that wordplay, I guess, between them.
Yeah.
That's so much fun.
Yeah. I'm just like, that brings us, like, let's just talk about them right out the
Can
gate.
Can we please just talk about Stoker? Because now that's all I can think about.
Sigh.
It's like... I feel like if there's a special gift in being able to create a character that you can have a crush on in a book versus on TV, there's like, it's so much easier, but to create a character that you like, I'd say both of them, because I feel like the chemistry between Veronica and Stoker is amazing. And you just kind of fall in love with them. And
absolutely.
Oh, totally.
The book has that great will they or won't they, when we know they will, but it's a matter of when, and keeping you on the edge of your seat waiting for it to happen.
I know that we had a conversation on Slack about, you know, casting Stoker, and I totally understand that there may be some actors who would be perfect, and at the same time, it would be lovely to have a film or a series. It should be a series, of course.
Yeah.
Netflix, hello. Or BBC, whatever. But it definitely should be a series. But at the same time, I love having my own image of Stoker. Sigh. And just having him that way.
Yeah, it's always hard to sort of compare, right? You've built this up in your mind. She's created such a vivid... living, breathing character for us. And so how you embody that as an actor and how you take that on and sort of bring new life to it is always a challenge and doesn't always work out the way we want it to.
I think Veronica would be a harder casting.
I was just thinking
to really win my heart over, even though I would love to see it on screen.
Yes.
But yeah.
But yes and no.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
exactly.
A double-edged sword.
It's, yeah. So, you know, we'll just see what happens. And I think what makes them so appealing is I think they do meet on that, like Sandra, you were saying, on that intellectual level, as well as on a, like a physical level, even though they don't touch very much. They keep them apart. But they have sort of that chemistry on so many like personal, intellectual, physical levels that you just really root for them.
One of my favorite scenes in A Curious Beginning, book one, is when they have to share a bed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There is only one bed.
Classic. Of course. And they're pretending to be married.
And it was, I just, like, I still remember in, you know, my mind's eye recreation of that scene where she wakes up with his feet in her face, I believe, right? So I don't know why that stuck with me, but it's just so delightful. Anytime I think of that, of this book, I remember that scene. And it's such a delight.
Yeah, I really love that whole piece of the book where they're, you know, they literally run off to join the circus. Yes. And they have to, you know, give into this like newly married trope, which is, you know, a classic romantic trope. And they still don't know each other very well. And there's still this like deep level of mistrust between the two of them. And I think I love all of the books. But what I think really hooked me about A Curious Beginning was the banter between the two of them, the way that they exchange barbs, their intelligence, their sense of humor and their sarcasm. And I actually wrote it down because I remember I typed this to you, Annette, when I was reading the book the first time. There's a line that Stoker says about when they're going to sleep in their little caravan. And he tells her that if she snores, he's going to throw a bell around her neck and kick her out of the caravan like a meddlesome cat. And I just thought, my God, who is this character? Who is this guy with the eye patch and the gold earrings and the scar? And why do I love him so much? Like, it's just so great.
Listeners, he has an eye patch that he has two eyes, but he was in a, was it a jaguar attack before the series starts? So he has like a scar across his face. And sometimes he has to wear an eye patch to rest his eye. And like, you know, it's like the most ridiculous sort of detail about a character, but it's also the hottest. I guess if.
Like, yeah. I think what I really like about him is all of his sort of physical appearance, it sets him apart from that life of privilege that we know he had and walked away from. But there are still parts of him that he holds on to his reputation. Like, he could care less about being accused of certain things or, you know, that kind of stuff. But when it comes to the people in his life that he loves and cares for, there's honor in that. There's a level of, you know, commitment to the death if it ever came to it. And I think that that's a really nice dichotomy. Like, he's not perfect, neither is Veronica, but they have these really powerful attributes that just make you cheer for them and want them to succeed. And Stoker, you know, swears like a sailor and eats sweets all the time. And I just want to marry him. So, you know.
Yes. I want you to marry him.
Yes. Thank you. Kirsten, I do love you already, but I don't want you to marry him. I'm sorry.
Would you throw over your man for a Stoker in real life?
I may have a tendresse for him.
Of course,
but I do want to say, I had a really lovely exchange, just a short, tiny exchange with Deanna Rayburn on Twitter once, because I wanted to let her know that every time I have, I love mint humbugs, the candy.
Oh yes.
Yes. So every time I have a mint humbug, I think of Stoker. He and his paper-wrapped sweets, you know, crunching through his honey sweets or whatever candy might be there, or working his way through everybody's dessert.
Yes.
I appreciate that about
him. And Veronica's and anyone. It's just so darling that he has this sweet tooth, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, I just love that. I love how she has layered on these lovely tiny little quirks, and they're such, both for both characters, they are memorable. They're, you know, quirky, but they have this, they each have a central core of ethical, moral behavior and beliefs that I think is what makes them so appealing for us, and why we as readers, why they're right to be, you know, why Veronica's right to be the protagonist and he is her partner in crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's definitely like the softness to them that the reader sees every once in a while. I think of Veronica's little, is it Chester?
The mouse
that she carried, like, you know, that like is on every adventure with her and is from her childhood. Yeah. And that just, like, it just makes me all gooey inside when I think about it.
Yes. Yes. And so I'm not going to spoil it, but I know Kirsten will know what I mean. There's a detail in the latest book which explains something that's very dear to Stoker and why. And oh,
Oh my gosh. I know exactly.
Listeners, when you get to that part, you're going to melt. You're going to know exactly what I'm talking about when you get there.
I almost fell off my chair.
I read it. I reread it.
Oh, yeah.
I reread it.
I highlighted that in my ebook so fast.
Annette, wait till you get to it.
Apparently, I am driving over to Sandra's house this weekend to steal her copy and not wait for the library book.
Absolutely.
I have all my books in soft cover, so I have to, like, get all of them in the matching set of soft cover. So yep. I'm waiting for my library version. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you can borrow mine.
One of the things I really like about Veronica is, like, living in the world that she does is she has sort of this modern sexual morality where she will have, and she has had sex with many men, but she always has sex with them outside of the Great Britain when she's travels. She travels a lot. And so she always will keep her liaisons with foreign men sort of outside, because then she has, like, protects her reputation in England, but not when she's gone. So this is one of these things that both of them are quite respectful of her decision to do that. And part of what drives them apart is that sort of, like you say, the ethics of it, and knowing what her reputation matters to her in England, which is, it's just this kind of interesting quirk of that works because of the time period it's set in, I think.
Yeah. Yes. I was just thinking that a little bit earlier, I can't remember what we were talking about, but that setting it in the Victorian times era, it just gives you the reason, a really great reason why two very attractive characters who are attracted to one another have to stay sexually separate for a certain amount of time until whatever. So it's a great setup. I love that. I love that.
Well, and I love what it says about true intimacy, too. Like, Stoker has traveled the world. He has had plenty of experiences of his own, as men are often allowed to do. But even still, like, there's that slow burn with them. And until they've reached that point where they're able to truly sort of give in, it's a level of trust and love and intimacy that doesn't exist just when you, you know, find someone attractive and are like, I totally want to bang you, let's go. Right? Which is how I would respond if I ever met Stoker. But I like that, you know, he is that sort of gentleman, right? Like, he gets really embarrassed and sheepish about certain things. But at the same time, he is often not afraid to, I don't know, frolic naked in a body of water when he knows certain people are watching.
Uh-huh. These are things, like, you don't need to see to really... appreciate.
And isn't that the wonder, like, one of the wondrous things about good writing, you know, that it's just a few phrases or maybe a few sentences and you just fill in the rest and it's so perfect.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
that's
definitely
one of the things I love about this series too, and the skill that Deanna Raeburn has. She doesn't have to show you everything.
Nope.
And there's nothing wrong with the books that do. I love those books too.
Yeah.
But, you know, in this setting for these novels, it just seems to really fit how Veronica will address the reader, because these are, quote unquote, it's a memoir. It's a personal memoir. And so she can say, this is nothing that concerns the memoir. And she'll just skip over something and you just fill it in, you know, in your imagination. And it's just so lovely.
Yeah. I also love when she uses those dear reader moments too, you know. She'll be like, and what could I have done in that moment? Well, dear reader, I will tell you what I did.
That's how I write my memoirs too, to my fictional readers.
Because you know someone's going to read it someday.
At least when we say dear listeners, we know... there's probably at least a few people listening.
More than a few.
Yes, I would hope so.
Yeah. I think I can, it really reminds me a lot of the Elizabeth Peters mysteries and styles. And I think Elizabeth Peters, who wrote from, I believe, the early 1970s, late 1960s, all the way into the 2000s when she died. And she was an Egyptologist herself professionally and then turned to writing novels. And she has a couple of series. One of them is about an early archaeologist and Amelia Peabody and Emerson Radcliffe. And they're like, she's, because she knows this stuff, it's really grounded in science and the history of it. And but then they totally riff off of it and take off with it. And they are also memoirs. And she also addresses dear readers. And I can tell certain books where I'm like, yes, I feel like these authors are well versed in this world of Elizabeth mm-hmm. Peters. Also, Elizabeth Peters has another series about a historian and a thief, a gentleman thief. And the chemistry between those two is like hits exactly the same happy spot as this relationship. So, right. You know, it's like, yeah, it's so delightful. Kately, I think we should also sort of talk about the plethora of side characters and relationships that these two characters develop. And I do love like the layering of when you have a longer series, and I hope she just keeps building on it. Like, please don't stop. Mm-hmm. We're not done with it yet. but yeah, and you can just sort of like, it just, you start with that world where a lot of the first book is about Stoker and Veronica and a few kind of key characters around, but each book adds on sort of like another layer of the world and builds up that depth in a really delightful way.
So, yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
And the dogs. I'm just going to say that.
Oh my God.
The dogs keep coming.
Yes.
There's so many dogs.
And turtles.
So much fun. I don't know if we're getting super spoilery yet, but in all capital letters, when there is a warehouse fire in the first book, Stoker goes back into the warehouse to save his dog Huxley. And like, mm-hmm. I remember fist pumping the air and being yeah. like, yeah, you did. You saved that dog.
Don't leave the dog behind.
Right? No. It, like, I already loved him, but then I like really loved him.
Yeah.
Well, and absolutely. One of the delightful details is that after the first book, when they sort of meet, they are both hired by this wealthy lord who has like his own personal collection of stuff. And, you know, their job is to restore the taxidermy, work through all of this stuff and make, I don't know, like, is
catalog
it supposed to be
it.
A museum?
Yeah, like log it and record it and kind of make his personal museum that may or may not be open to the public. But there's like all these interesting outbuildings, and there's, he makes a butterfly house, and it's just basically they have a patron who like lets them mm-hmm. sort of toil away in whatever they want, and he's not really that concerned about their productivity or if they're searching for a mystery or solving that or going off. And, you know, so, but it's like this kind of like believable thing that kind of ties them together beyond that first adventure and gives them a home base that is really delightful.
It's believably unconventional.
Yeah.
Yes. He is the world's best boss, basically. He's, you know, all you could ask for. He gives you room and board, you know, he lets you play with his giant tortoise that roams around the grounds.
Patricia is the name.
I believe, yes.
I was like, I can't remember the lord's name, but I can remember the...
Rose Moran or something
Moran.
Like that?
Rose Moran, yeah.
Yeah.
And his
I also enjoy his sister, yes.
His sister.
I was just going to say, I quite like Cordelia. Mm-hmm. I think she's a great... She's another example of sort of a woman who is really intelligent and has her own interests and stuff. But unfortunately for her, she kind of gets stuck in those womanly, feminine roles. She has to play, you know, this doting aunt to her nieces and nephews because her brother is a little bit eccentric and doesn't seem to really care about taking care of his children. So sometimes she gets stuck with that. But I find she's a really interesting character for Veronica to sort of befriend. And, you know, she introduces her to the Curiosity Club, mm-hmm. which brings on a whole other sort of a piece of a life for Veronica, which I think is great. And the fact that something like that even would exist is really interesting and fun. And Lady Welly is part of that family. That family is just like a wealth of great characters.
Yeah, all the characters. I do feel like I need to say in defense of Lord Rosmoren that I don't think... of that era, I don't think it was normal for fathers, aristocratic mm-hmm. fathers, to take an interest actually in the raising of their children.
Yeah,
so
that's
by
true.
Those accounts, he seemed pretty normal, but he is quite eccentric. He's actually quite darling.
Yeah.
If I can say that about a fictional aristocratic noble.
Yes. Doesn't he like break his leg at one point doing something really silly?
Didn't he trip over the tortoise?
He tripped over Patricia. Yeah. There you go.
Well, and the Curiosity Club is like a collection of intellectual women who are interested in science and research and study. And slowly, like, Veronica sort of becomes a part of that group, and it introduces more interesting
They're
women.
Also adventurers as
yes.
well.
Right? Yes.
So I'm not going to spoil this, but something does happen with Lady C, Lady Cordelia. And I have this feeling, because this kind of happens in the background of a couple of novels, I have this feeling, I'm hoping that she will get a larger part in the storyline at some point.
Yeah, that would be great.
Then we find out a bit more of the mystery surrounding what happens to her.
Yeah.
So,
Well,
it's so cryptic.
I know. Like, maybe it's time to, like, release the one of the key secrets that kind of frees us to talk a little bit. More about.
Okay.
So we're blowing the spoiler horn. So if you want to go read it, go read it. I don't think if we tell you this, it will damage your enjoyment.
Yeah.
But
no.
In case, we're going to tell you now. So go read the books. Come back when you're done. We'll wait for you right here.
We'll wait.
I'll go get another cup of tea.
Exactly. Okay, we're back, and who wants to tell the fun secret of Veronica's past?
I think you should, Annette.
So what we learn in the first book is that Veronica was the secret, you can't even say love child, of the Prince Regent. Her father is the Prince Regent, so she is actually secret royalty. And she was... her mother married the prince secretly and before he married the proper right woman. So her mother has died, left her in the care of these people, and she is like a great political secret and becomes a political pawn in several of the stories where there's a lot of maneuvering. But it also introduces her to the royal family. And so various members of the royal family come to her for help because she is sort of able to solve mysteries and she's connected and she protects them even though they have done very little to protect her.
And even though she really works hard at setting the expectation that she doesn't expect anything from them, she doesn't want to be beholden to them or under their thumb in any way, it kind of comes across that sometimes it does feel like she's under their thumb whether she wants to be or not.
Yes.
But, she's very good about saying like, I know who I am and I don't want to be a princess.
Based on how princesses are treated these days, I don't know that I would either.
I think I would agree with that.
Yeah. It also sort of like introduces her to the Secret Service. And so it's Aunt Welly who is like sort of a liaison, as we discover. And there are several members of the Scotland Yard. But it just becomes a point that helps to drive some of the story forward and create that mystery and... it's fun.
Well, and it sort of helps to tell the stories of like the seedy underbelly of the elite and the aristocrats because, you know, they're not coming to her with problems of the everyday man. These are problems of royalty or people who are very high up. And so it's kind of nice. I think it's interesting to sort of have these people who've sort of been cast out from society, so Stoker especially, brought in to sort of save the day in some ways. For these people who have, you know, dug themselves some really interesting deep holes.
Well, it's being both the outsider and the insider at the same time. So you have enough of access to the world of privilege to know how to operate within it, but not so much that you can't be a little subversive or care if you're undercutting it a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the things that I love, I'm sure I'm not the only one, about Veronica and Stoker is when they do take on these assignments, they do have their own reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes to a point where they have to decide about how far they're going to go and how far they're willing to go and whom they're willing to defy for their own personal sense of honor and morality.
Yep.
And I love that. I love that tension, that conflict. I love seeing characters take a stand. I think we all do, you know? So especially in a mystery, because when we read mysteries, what we're really, I mean, we love the mystery. We love, I think, many of us trying to solve the mystery itself. But I think what we ultimately are looking for is that sense of justice,
yep.
that justice is served at some level. Yep. And so these are two wonderful justice servers.
Yes, definitely. And it's not always served in the way you think it's going to be served either, yep. which I kind of enjoy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. When you read mysteries, are you the sort that rides along or do you actively try to solve it?
I think it depends on my mood. It really does, right? And then sometimes you read something and you kind of know.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I know who did it. I know who did it. But the writing's so good, you keep reading anyway.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. So yeah, it just depends on my mood. But if it's one of those books where, you know, there are some books out there where they market them like, you're never going to guess. So they're really taunting you to try. Yeah. Then yes, I will try because I am competitive like that. <challenge.
laughs> You're like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Exactly.
How about you, Kirsten? I know that you're actually really good at solving things.
I'm a good guesser.
Yeah, she's an excellent guesser.
So sometimes I like to just guess right off the hop. So once I get a sense of like, okay, here's our main, you know, swath of secondary characters, new and old and whatever, mm-hmm. I'll kind of just be like, I think it's this person. But you're right, Sandra. Sometimes I get so engrossed in the book that for me, I'm so drawn into these characters so much so that I just can't pull myself out to like focus on the mystery. I just want to read more about what Veronica and Stoker are doing. Right. And so I'm just like, buckle up, whoever did it, they'll figure it out. I'm not worried. So I'm just going to keep reading.
Yeah.
That's what I generally do too, where I just kind of like get carried along. But because I read so many mysteries, there's like, you know, the patterns and the trends, you'd be like, oh yeah, it's probably, this is what's happening. And I'm guessing that. And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're not right. But I think the best mysteries to me, there's so much more than just the mystery. And that's what makes mm-hmm. a book like this or a series like this really rereadable and where you can go in. And because of it's all the relationships and the pieces and the everything that's happening that once you know, you can just read it again and again and again. Yeah. So
it's just like you're saying about layers.
Yeah.
Yeah, the layers that are put on and especially, and again, I just have to return to especially the layers of secondary characters. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, I don't know if this is me being too, you know, one note, but I do have to say I quite adore Tiberius.
I was going to say, we probably need to talk about Templeton Vane Brothers.
He's so naughty.
He's delightful. Like, I know we're not supposed to fall in love with him, but...
He's fun. Yes, we are. In a completely different way from Stoker, and I definitely enjoy it.
Yes. He is the oldest brother of the Templeton Vanes. I think there's four of them, correct?
Yes.
Yes, and we haven't.
Mean, I think the youngest one we don't know as well.
Right. Meriwether is the youngest. Meriwether,
and Rupert is the lawyer.
Sir Rupert.
Yeah. So we sort of slowly kind of interact with these characters, but Tiberius is the inheritor of the title, so he's Lord. Mm-hmm. And he is like sort of also in like who isn't in love with Veronica. But I don't know if he is like he's in love with Veronica, but more because it annoys his brother and his brother have a very fraught relationship. And so, you know, it's like he tries to woo Veronica in an effort to drive his brother crazy because he knows his brother is not, he thinks acting fast enough. So, you know, that tension between the siblings. And yet it's kind of a loving tension, even though, you know, I think.
Yeah, I think it's like a really good, complicated brotherly relationship. Like there's definitely history there that we do sort of slowly start to learn about in certain books, which is really nice to get some of that backstory.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Annette. I think a lot of what he does is to push Stoker's buttons, which who doesn't? Like, that's just fun. Like, that's great. So I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I think it's like Stoker is often the smartest man in the room. He's often in charge. And so I think when he's around Tiberius, it creates a really interesting dynamic where they do butt heads and where he doesn't always come out on top, and where he doesn't even have, you know, just the level of like where you sit on the standings in society, right? And so it's always really interesting to see those larger group settings where they're both in the room and how they handle that.
Well, and I think, I don't know if, I know, Kirsten, you have siblings. I don't know if you do, Sandra, but like, don't you find like in some ways your sibling relationships never really change? We, like, they mature, they grow up, but there's sort of a fundamental balance that stays the same. And like,
you just,
yeah. So I feel, and I feel like that captures it, where it's like, yes, I am the only girl and third out of four within my family, so sort of a middle child, but there's like ways my siblings still treat me now, which is the same, you know. And it's like, oh yeah, we all have our patterns. And, you know, I just, you see that within those brothers too, like in Rupert as well, and how they all sort of see Stoker as the rebel child who's like, just won't conform, and he's gone
the
off.
The black
off.
Sheep.
Yeah. You know, and so I really see that within those characters.
It must be a brother thing, because my brother and I, same, like he and I, he knows how to push my buttons when he wants to, and I know how to push his. I'm trying to be better about it now that I'm an adult. But my sister and I, like, we, there's a pretty big age gap between the two of us. It's about 3.5 years. So growing up, we weren't super close because she was just that much younger than me. But we're best friends now. So we've definitely grown and changed. We found drama, and now we love drama together. And when she hit high school, I was like, oh, you're cool. Let's hang out. We're good.
See, it's like 3.5 years is nothing. I have 10 and 7 years between me and my older siblings.
That's right.
And so that could be part of it, where I'm just always the baby.
Yeah,
you'll always but be on the upside, it you're doesn't matter how I how old I get, they're always way older. So
well, I think too, just to say about, you know, back to Stoker and his siblings, his brothers, is there is a secret about him that I don't want to spoil.
No,
I don't
spoil
want to
it.
Spoil.
No, we'll keep it.
That I think when you know that, and then you see then you read how his, well, Tiberius for certain treats him, I really love that extra sort of that extra layer of complexity.
Yeah.
Right? So of course, with siblings who have a fraught relationship, once you grow up into adulthood, then it's always more complicated. But I think the question is always, do they really love one another or not? Mm. And how does that play out? And I love seeing it play out in this series between those brothers, especially in book four, because book four is a lovely book.
Read book four, everybody.
Yes.
Read book four.
Read them all.
I think book four is my favorite so far. And I think because it does get at some key relationships, and one of them being Tiberius and Stoker, another being Veronica and Stoker, and sort of like really reflecting, I think, especially on who Veronica is and what her issues, I'll just say, like some of her issues around trust and people and the backstory. And it's just, it's a really important book in this series, I think.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I would agree.
I think book three is also very important for some of the backstory as well.
Yes.
Because I remember that I read book three and was like, oh my God, I love this one. It's my favorite. There's so much tension. And she was like, just wait. And I was like, no, I don't know what you mean. Like, how could it get any better? And she was like, just wait. And she was right.
Like, book four is they go out on this adventure, and it's sort of like a not quite a locked room mystery, but you are on an island. And you're in like this castle-y sort of mansion, which in my head, I have a very specific picture of what that looks like. And yeah. And so then you've got a family, and you've got, is there like ghosts of relationships past and people past, and secrets being revealed, and like so many layers from that perspective on the story as well. And then at the same time, like some really important key turning points in your key relationships that just make it like just a really fun read.
Yeah, it's so great. So good.
And like trying to tell you everything without telling you anything.
I know.
You did an excellent job. Well done.
And that's the one where there's poisons and death or glass rings and like a little village at the bottom of the hill.
And seances and, yeah, this little quirky village with these delightful little villagers.
They're like villagers forecasting futures and fortunes and stuff. And
running hustles. These little children.
Running hustles.
Hustlers.
But yeah, no, they're all just very fun.
Delightful. Mm.
Is there anything else we want to cover in terms of these books?
I just think that they must be read in order.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. You cannot read them out of order. Not so much. I mean, they'll make sense. Each individual mystery within each individual book will totally make sense. But you miss so much of the character nuance and the relationship building and the complexities of the relationships and the things you discover, or really Veronica maybe discovers about herself, right? You miss that journey. So I highly, highly suggest everybody read them in order.
Yes.
And if you are so inclined, like I usually try and reread the book right before the brand new book comes out. I love doing that. I didn't have the chance to do that this time with book six, but that's really fun too, because then you get kind of like the 1-2 punch of, you know, where the relationship was before. And then you get to read, oh, how does it develop in this volume? So it's such a great series. And so much fun and so lovely and smart. And anyway, I could go on. I could gush forever.
We can.
About
the
series.
We can keep going.
We totally can.
You know, and gush about the author, Deanna Raeburn. But, you know, we have to end at some point. I get it.
Mm-hmm. How about for you, Kirsten?
I mean, it's like you've described in it. I think it's a very rereadable series, which I kind of love. Much like we all have those comfort TV shows that we keep coming back to, especially in times like these where we just want things that are familiar and comforting. This is a series for me that I think I could, now that I've read it all through up until what's been released, you know, I could pick up any book and just enjoy that sort of section of the story, or go back to the very beginning and read it all over again. And I think that's the real mark of really powerful storytelling, where it still feels new, but also you just have this like heartfelt connection to it over time. And you know, I think Deanna just does an amazing job creating this really vibrant world that we are immediately attracted to and drawn into. And I just think the dialogue the characters have is so so great, so sharp and witty, and I frequently laugh out loud, which I think is rare for a book. Not all books can make you literally throw your head back and laugh that much. And I often do that. I think every book at some point has made me do that. So I think that's, for me, a really good mark of really solid, great storytelling. I would like to see it done, adapted in some way. But again, there's always that worry that they're going to screw it up. So that's said with like a grain of salt.
Kirsten, I think at one point after you started reading it, you actually sent a picture of Tom Austin from a previous episode we've done on Smooch about the Royals, which is Jasper from the Royals. And this is how Kirsten got me to watch the Royals, is she's like, this is Stoker. And so then I was like, wait a second, who is this guy? He's actually, I could see it. And so now the joke is I have made a little picture of him with the eye patch.
And I keep sending it to me all the time.
I do. I send it to Kirsten all the time. I'm like, send that picture with the eye patch there.
I actually tweeted that headshot to Deanna when we were talking. They were talking about casting for some reason.
Yes.
I can't remember why.
Because everyone wants that. Like, her fans would love
everyone
to see.
Everyone has
that.
Like their ideal. Like, I think Henry Cavill was in there at one point. People were throwing around names.
I responded
and said, I'm just going to leave his headshot right here for you. And she responded. And it was such a great moment. I was so excited. So, yeah, Tom Austin, he could be a great Stoker. And actually, when I was rereading some of the books for this podcast, I made a note because I reread the sort of physical description of Tiberius and what he's supposed to be like. And for some reason, I was kind of picturing him a little bit bulkier, and I don't know why, but he's actually he's supposed to be quite thin and like very aristocratic looking. So Tom Hiddleston, we could have the brothers Tom.
I could see that.
So I'm just going to put that out there.
I could do that.
They even kind of look alike. They have the same coloring. Uh-huh. Anyways, that's my wish list, the Toms.
Well, and I think of the show Miss Fisher Mysteries, which does a great job of having mysteries and good chemistry. And I'm like, oh, see, that's kind of a similar sort of vibe. That would be a great sort of series. And again, it should be a series like that mm-hmm. put together. And that series is built on a book series by Carrie Greenspan, I think, which I have also read. It's a fun series of books. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but it does a great, it's a period piece, captures some good chemistry. You kind of, again, I forget. I see, I'm like the worst mystery reader because I forget the mystery. I care only about the people and I get super invested. And yeah, so if you know, yeah, but that would be kind of a good vibe I would like to hit for that series.
Right. Yeah. You should put that in the show notes.
Yes, and also Tom Austin's headshot.
Okay, I will post Tom Austin's headshot.
And also the photo you made of him with an eye patch. Can you put that in the show?
Please. Yes, which in a certain Slack we have with friends, I can be used as a little tiny icon response, custom icon. Nice. So I'm going to have a hard time if they make this series and it's not Tom Austin because
we're going to have to go through a period of mourning.
Yeah, we'll be like, fine.
Yeah, it's like, that's fine. He'll just be the stoker of our hearts. That's yeah. okay.
That's right.
We don't have to share him with the world that way. I'm okay
exactly.
with it.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. I'm just going to sit here and think about that for a minute.
I know. Everyone's looking dreamy-eyed now. We're all very dreamy-eyed.
Have so much respect for an author who can develop the depth of characters like this and make me care so much. Because there's lots of mystery series that sort of like hit that, like a cozy mystery series with the romance and so on. But there's not as many that I am as deeply invested in as this one. And actually, Deanna Raeburn's Lady Grey series is great and I really like it.
Yeah.
It does not hold the same place in my heart as this one.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know what she did, but she created a little bit of magic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree. And I love the Lady Grey series, mm-hmm. you know, because I was raving about it to you. I really love that series. And this one, it's different. It is different. I'm so invested. Yeah, so invested in these characters.
Something magic in Veronica. It's like not even the relationship, but in the character of Veronica herself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Excelsior.
Oh, well done.
Oh, so yes, when you all go off and read these books and you can come back and we want to hear all about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We're here to talk and all the spoilers you can tell us about. But I think unless you have anything else to add, we will wrap this one up right here because I don't want to spoil too much of the magic.
I feel like we did a good job. We kept it pretty spoiler light.
Yeah.
I just have heart eyes right now. That's just
mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm just going to go turn around and read the series all over again. Or drive out and steal it from Sandra's house.
Yeah. No. It's ready. It's ready. It's ready for you.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for introducing me to this series and joining me, Sandra.
It's been such a fun conversation, and I am a little bit distracted now thinking about book 4 again. I may have to go back and read it right away. Thank you so much for having me. So great to talk with you and Kirsten.
Yeah, and thank you for coming on this ride with me, Kirsten.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for getting me on the train in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it was so much fun chatting with you and Sandra. I am always happy to discuss books that I love because they're just fantastic and bring us such joy.
I know. What books are we going to discuss next?
Ooh, can we start a list?
We should. Well, thank you everyone for joining us, dear listeners.
Very nice.
We will be back again soon with another episode. And until next time, stay safe and just go read these books. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of the Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon. Thank you.